This is episode 46, and we are thrilled you are in. As you may hear, this episode will be in English, kinda new to our listeners. Don't worry, it will not be permanent. We at Bully are trying some new ways to broadcast this podcast. Hope you enjoy this show. So, who we got? He's native Cuban, played junior hockey in France and Sweden. He promoted to be a video coach, was last season at Lausanne in Switzerland, and is now with the great SC Bern. To cut it, we had an interview with Leo Giroux. We talked hockey and way a lot more. So, here we go. Thank you again, Leo, for your time. Very grateful to have you. First of all, where are you and how are you doing?
Thanks a lot for having me. Really appreciate that. I'm currently sitting in Stockholm, where I spend my summers, and I'm doing very well, very well. It's one of the few sunny days here, so I'm out enjoying this before coming to Bern.
Yeah. But we start square one. You were born in Havana, Cuba. How do you manage to get into ice hockey and not into baseball? Because I heard in Cuba, baseball is a very popular sport.
It is. It's currently changing a bit. Football is taking over slowly and slowly. I mean, it's a bit poetical. You can speak for hours about that, but I don't think I'm here for that. But to come to the point, I'm born in Cuba. My mom is Cuban. My dad is French. I moved to France when I was 6 months old, so I didn't have the time to skate in Cuba. And I don't even think you have the chance to skate in Cuba. As I said in the past few friends, I don't really want, I mean, I don't think it should be a priority right now to have ice rink in Cuba. but I'm very happy and proud to be half Cuban. We're not so many Cuban French in the hockey industry. Which is, maybe it will change in the future. I hope the sport will be more open and we'll see, also that kind of mix in the future.
Yeah. And just for the record, you're the first Cuban on our podcast.
You know, guys, you should, if you want to know Cuban, there is, I think, the video coach of there's a team in NHL was a Las Vegas. Las Vegas has a video coach with which is half Cuban as well.
Oh, okay.
And Al Montoya, which was the former goalie of Montreal Canadiens and the New York Islanders, is also half Cuban.
Okay.
So if you want any more Cubans, we can do the podcast in Spanish next time.
Oh boy.
And what was it like when you came to France?
As you can imagine, at 6 months old, you don't have a lot of memories, vivid memories. But from the pictures I have when I was a kid, I seem to be pretty happy. My parents wanted me to stay in Cuba until I was 6 months old because I could get the passport and the nationality. Then I directly left to France. When I in France was perfect. I mean, growing up in Grenoble, in the middle of the Alps, I had a lot of fun. I think I had a very good childhood, great memories. I don't see any. No, I'm very, very happy about my first years on this planet.
And you played hockey in France, and our knowledge of French ice hockey is very low, to be honest with you. What is the junior ice hockey like in France?
It's declining from my point of view. I mean, I'm not in the country anymore. I'm not watching every games, at least at the junior level. But if we just look at the results right now, if you just talk about the juniors, I had the feeling it was developing. We're closer, getting closer to Germany. We're, I think, at the same level as Austria. And now, I think if we play, the under-20s should play against Germany right now. I think it would be a rugby score. The hockey in France right now, I think you have 3-4 top teams, developing players in a good way. Providing the national team with players. But as you can imagine as well, you have teams in the Alps, a few teams in the north of the country. I won't say it's a lack of player. I won't say it's a lack of rinks. Maybe it's a lack of good coaches. Maybe it's the thing. But once again, I'm not in the country anymore, but if you compare to Germany and even Austria right now, I have the feeling that they've been investing the time in education and coaches.
Okay. And at world tournaments, are you cheering for France?
I try. I mean, the issue now with COVID. I'm always sharing for France. I have a lot of friends playing for the national team.
Yeah.
And I'm always backing them. I will always back them more than I would be backing Sweden, even though I spent a lot of years here.
Mm.
And I think I will always back them way more than Cuba because, I don't think Cuba will play, is currently playing any international competition. But I'm always, my heart is always going with the French national team,
mm-hmm.
Especially the last years. To me, this year, I've been working with Christophe Alluette, which was the goalie for the national team. He told me stories about the World Championships. I was watching this from my living room. I was always going crazy when they would beat Russia, when they would beat Switzerland.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I really hope those times will come back. I really hope that the French national team will come back at the top.
Absolutely.
And I know they're working so hard to make this happen. Mm. I really want this to happen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Cool.
Later, you went to Sweden. Instead of warmer, the weather got colder and colder. How did this commitment come about?
It was way colder. Someone should warn me about that. The first winters were very tough, but why? I was playing in Lyon in the Ligue Magnus, the first division.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, I was not your top two, top three defenseman. I was not playing the power play. I was not the one you would send on the ice in every tough decisions. I was also 20, I think, at the time. I always wanted to play abroad. I always wanted to see other cultures, and I was thinking that hockey and sport could be the perfect occasion for me to discover something new.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Sweden a bit before, just to travel. I loved it. And I always had an interest for the Swedish mentality, the way they were teaching hockey, and I always wanted to be a part of it. So at some point, I just, when I had a hard time finding a new team, I sent, I think, over 200 emails to teams in Sweden to have a tryout. I received maybe 5 answers. Which was a bit disappointing. So I just told myself and I told my dad that I would go to Sweden, try my luck there.
Mm-hmm.
I took a one-way ticket. I didn't have so much money on me. I was just with my hockey sticks, my bag, and just finger crossed and being like, hey, I will find something. I can skate, I can shot. I'm not the best, but I'm pretty sure there's a team in the maybe third tier would like to have me. So it happened, and I'm very grateful and so happy that that happened. And I would like to thank someone who really helped me the first months was Niklas Andersson from Norrtälje, who really like seeing me my ambition and the fact that I really wanted to stay here.
Mm-hmm.
So he really he was the guy who signed my first contract there. Okay. He signed me at first. Yeah. No. So once again, I really like my stay in Sweden. I really like Sweden, Swedish people, and I really found a new home in this country.
Wow, that's very interesting. It's kind of an adventure. Yeah. Just buy a one-way ticket, grab your sticks, the skate, and a bag, and went off.
Exactly, and as you can imagine, my English was a French English. If you can hear the accent right now, I didn't know English at all when I came there.
Yeah,
which. I had good stories about that, but I was 20, 21. As my dad told me, like, nothing bad could happen to me by going there, and nothing bad happened to me. I mean, only good stories and lessons.
Yeah.
So if anyone wants to do the same thing, I encourage them to do the same thing.
Yeah.
And we learn a new language, meet new people, and at the end, you're going to play hockey. So. Yeah. Yeah.
And so you played as a player in France and in Sweden.
Yeah.
Can you tell
exactly.
us about the difference of junior hockey back then?
It is, and that's the thing with Sweden is that you have a big variety of level. You have the top teams, Djurgården, Frölunda, HV71, and you have the like your local team. Like you go to Stockholm, there's maybe like 15 teams, so you will find a spot and you will see any kind of hockey.
Yeah.
For sure, I was always attracted by the top. by looking at the top level. The difference, I would say, differences, I think they are the ground level, the kids, the fact that they had very good coaches. I think the best coaches in the country, they are with the under six, under seven, and then eight, under nine. Okay. Sometimes I was just waiting and watching the practices and seeing that everything started at the ground level. Mm. What I really liked as well with the coaching there is that they were very taking care of the player itself as a human being. They were not seeing the player as like just a player. They were talking to the guy after the practices, before the practices, checking in, hey, how are you doing? Like small things. I'm not saying it's not the same thing in France or anywhere else, but just something really like struck me when I was there. I was a bit not disappointed, but I was expecting more people on lakes skating because this is a big cliche that everyone is carrying. Like, yeah, Nordic, Scandinavian, they're so good in hockey because anytime they're done with schools, they just go on lakes and play hockey.
Yeah.
And then I was like, no, they do the same thing as everyone else. They go home, they spend time on Snapchat. No, it's just that the time they're on the ice, they're using it properly.
Yeah.
But yeah, and same thing with Sweden right now. There's a big question mark right now with the Swedish model.
Mm.
If you check the results, they were not that good in the last World Championship. They were not that good in the 20s World Championships.
Yeah.
So maybe it would be the time for them to change their system. But once again, I don't think you can really tell if the system is good just after two tournaments. I think the Olympics next year will be a good test. But this is the differences I saw between France and Sweden in hockey.
Yeah, okay.
And why did you stop playing ice hockey?
I had a revelation. I was playing in the fourth division.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly I played with someone who was maybe like 5 years younger than me as a defenseman. He was pairing me. And he had like the cage and everything.
Yeah.
And I just looked at him. I was like, who's that kid? Like, he was playing so well. Then I come to the bench, and after the game, I'm just talking to the coach and say, who's this kid? I mean, he practices with us, but I never really cared about him. Like, I was just saying hi and all that. And then when I see him playing, I was thinking, he's 5 years younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
He's 10 times better than me.
Okay.
I had this dream of playing NHL, like everyone. I mean, like a lot of kids. And then I mm-hmm. think it was like a slap in the face, like, Leo, you can play at the like average level,
okay.
But you probably never play NHL. And the other thing is that I was very into coaching since a young age. I'm a big Arsenal fan, mm-hmm. unfortunately, in mm-hmm. football. So I'm suffering a lot, recently. I was a big Arsene Wenger fan as well.
Yeah.
So I learned a lot from him, from football, from all that. You guys in Germany have like tremendous good coaches.
Yeah.
And that was the time for me. I was thinking, you played the game, you loved it. Now is the time you can maybe tell, like, you can maybe switch and turn the page and try something new.
Mm.
I didn't leave hockey and the game, bitter.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't leave because I was injured. I just did something else because, I realized, like, I was not fed up, but it wasn't the time for me to do something new. And, coaching, came at the right timing and I loved it. It's different than playing, but I love both the same way.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very interesting ending of an active career.
Yeah. This kid is currently playing in Allsvenskan, which is the second division in Sweden.
Okay.
And I coached him after that.
No,
it was a bit. I coached him after that. It was a bit. That was the first thing I told my friends who were coaching as well. The first questions were like, "Hey guys, how can you teach someone hockey when you know that this kid is better than you?"
Yeah.
And then now it's better.
Yeah.
Especially now I'm coaching. Yeah. I mean, especially now I'm coaching staff when I'm coaching.
Yeah.
Players who play NHL.
He is the reason why I'm here.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh. Exactly.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, after working as a coach, you finally became a video coach in Lausanne in 2020. Tell us how it came about this. How do you became a video coach?
My once again, trying my luck. I was working for the EHC 3 years ago or 4 years ago. Yeah. The EHC is like I would say not the biggest club, but like top clubs in Europe. They're 80, 85. Mm-hmm. They're always meeting twice a year to talk about, like, I would say politics in hockey.
Yeah.
Rules, trying to develop the game, mm-hmm. and change a few things. And I was working for them, just helping out. And I met John Fust in, mm-hmm. Gothenburg at the same time. And I knew John from his time as a head coach in the national team under 20, in Switzerland. Mm-hmm. And I really liked his team as well. I was watching his game online, trying to find like streaming, and all that. And I remember John. So I was just, getting into a bus. John was sitting. Mm-hmm. There were a free spot next to him. And I just sat next to him and, I said, "Hey, I'm Leo," in French.
Yeah.
And he was like, "French." And then we started to talk. He was a bit tired. And, and then I just told him like, "Hey, what's your email? I have so many questions." So, we started to have like a little like professional relationship from that, me being curious and wanting to learn more. And, 3 years after, John, I saw that Lausanne was looking for a video coach. And at the time, I didn't really know what was a video coach. So, mm-hmm. And I was just saying myself, I always wanted to work in Switzerland, coming from Grenoble. I was always watching, when I had the chance to watch Bern, Lugano, Zurich, all those teams. And I was just thinking, hey, I'm going to send my CV. Mm-hmm. We're going to see what's going to happen after. And, then we'll see. And a few friends were telling like, "Leo, it's too early. You will never get the job, blah, 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 blah." I think 2 hours after, I see my phone ringing, John Fust. I'm like, "Perfect. Hey, John, how you doing? Hey, Leo, blah, blah, blah. Would you like to have a meeting with Craig McTavish next Friday?" And I was like, "Yes." So then I talked to Craig. Okay. And I got the job a few months after, and I spent a fantastic year learning a lot and learning a lot from the players, from the staff. And it was great. The ending was not so good, losing quarterfinals against Zurich.
Okay.
It was a pretty, was an epic quarterfinal.
Mm.
But no, learned a lot, and I'm very, very looking forward to be next year and start a new chapter in Bern.
And last year, the video coach at SC Bern was a Finnish man, Petri Tuononen. Now you are at SC Bern. This can be called an upgrade. Is the work here the same as in Lausanne, or are there differences?
In Lausanne, I was more, I think at the beginning, I was more of an IT guy. I was helping everyone with, it was great for me. I mean, it was a way for me to get a fit in this world. I was helping a lot with like everything was tech related. Then I slowly grew as an analyst with data and video. And then at the end, I think Craig McTavish was asking my point of view as well, like what did I think about lines, what they think about tactics and all that, which for me was great to be part of the coaching staff, like an assistant coach. Mm-hmm. And that was the main topic when I talked to Johan Lundskog and Reto Raffiner when André Bett was not the GM yet. I wanted to be a hybrid assistant coach and video coach. I didn't want to be only a video coach that would just only trick and click on buttons. I wanted to be also a part of discussions about the playbook, the face-off, the breakout, all that, being like seen as a real assistant coach. And this is why I discover right now by talking with the staff, I really enjoy it. I really have the feeling that all the tasks are spread into all the assistant coaches. And I think right now I'm going to help as well with the youth movement. Mm-hmm. With digitalization, trying to use technology in hockey. And I will also try to learn the job by being with the under-20s and under-17s and also with the younger kids. So I think to me it's a perfect place to be. Especially that SC Bern for me is a massive club in Europe.
Absolutely.
When I was a kid, when I was a teenager, I remember that pretty well. After a test, I was a bit early finishing the test, and I was just having a paper, and I was thinking, okay, Leo, what do you want to do? What would be the perfect career for you, the playing career? And I had like few teams, and at some point I just wrote like SC Bern for 3 years.
Oh,
and then NHL, New York Islanders. So I might talk to Mark Streit to know how I could go there.
Nice.
Yeah, no, life is funny.
Yeah,
and Mark Streit is ja also in Bern.
What do you take with you from your time as an active player into your new job as a video coach? Is there something you can take with you?
Yeah, this is something I discovered last year. When I joined the staff, I was surrounded by NHL, ex-NHL players. I mean, Christo, you had one cup, Craig McTavish, I think four. Peter Svoboda had one. So I was really thinking, okay, those guys, they play at a very high level. It's going to be tough for me to say something relevant sometimes. And I just discovered that even though I didn't play at the highest level, being in the locker room is the same thing. The chills you can have before a game are the same. The disappointment after losing is the same thing. So I think I can carry and I can bring in Bern, my knowledge about being in another country. There's maybe some players who played in Switzerland for the first time and don't really know about the country. Maybe I can help them with where it is to play in a country. Maybe I can just talk to them about some game situations, even though we don't play at the same level. The puck is the same.
Yeah.
The ice is the same and the size of the rink is the same thing. So maybe the speed was a bit slower, but I think I can really help on that level. Mm. And now, once again, I'm super excited to be in Bern.
Cool.
And do you already know players from the SC Bern team? If yes, which ones?
It's particularly one that I missed during the season. When he left, a bunch of players were already missing him. It's Corey Konecker.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked him as a player. He was not as performing as he was before in Lausanne, maybe, but I know that right after when he moved to Bern, he played very well. I am pretty sure next year is going to have a top year. So I knew Corey from before. Corey was texting me during the year sometimes. Mm. He was one of the guys telling me that Bern was looking for a video coach. And I don't know him personally, but Thierry, a French player, we have a lot of friends in common, and they all told me that he was a great guy. So I'm looking forward to seeing this. And now, except that, I just know the guys by facing them with Lausanne last year, by scouting them, I would say. And no, this is a very good team, I think, right now, with great players. And now it's just time to find the right X and O's and the alchemy outside the rink and all that.
But as you know, the hockey world is a small world. You can see everyone at any places sometimes, just a trade or whatever, right?
Yeah, exactly. yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's good to see that even if some players can get traded, they remain friends with the other guys. I mean, to me, I didn't have like the biggest relationship with Corey, but every time we're meeting Bern, all the guys were very happy to see him, and I was very happy to see him. And no, it's a business, but at the end, it's a human business. It's there's family, there's people, there's friendships, and that's why I love this sport.
Yeah. Well, the good thing is it's not the NHL culture where you trade someone. And it's just like a number or so. I think in Europe, it's just a little bit different.
I don't know if it's a matter of time. I mean, I'm right now, I'm not, I don't think I will get traded myself. I hope not. I mean, if I get traded, I don't know. But I'm good in Bern. I know it's a beautiful city.
Yeah.
But we'll see in the future what it's going to be. I know this year has been very special compared to the other years with the trades. I mean, it was, I think, one of the first time.
Yeah.
That there were so many trades. It were like in Biel, Lausanne, Davos, Bern.
Yeah.
Now we'll see next year. I hope that in Bern we're going to have the team we want from day one.
Yeah. Will your new home be also in Bern, or do you drive every day from Lausanne? For our listeners, it's a one-hour drive from Lausanne to Bern.
Yeah, it is. It's a 1 hour drive, which made the conversations between me and Bern a bit easier.
Okay.
But no, I've been Bern. I will be in Bern.
Okay.
It's going to be very good. I talked to a few guys as well about the city. I talked to Etienne Froidevaux. I talked to Christophe Berchi a lot with Justin Kruger about the city, all players from Bern.
Yeah.
They all told me they've been telling me to it's a beautiful city.
Yeah.
We really like it. So I will be staying there. No, I can't wait to be there to swim in the Are River. I've been visiting Bern a bit in the past, and I think it's what we say in Sweden, miss it, which means cozy, and I think it's a very cozy city.
And what do you find particularly beautiful about the city, also the city Bern?
Drink? No, I really like the Postfinance Arena. It's good because I'm going to spend a lot of time there. And the good thing is that about the rink, I think it's the this is what we try to do sometimes between video coaches. We don't review all the rinks, but Bern is the best rink in the league for video coach because you just sit next to the benches and you don't have to run like meters and meters to get to the locker room.
Yeah.
No, about the city itself, as I said, I really like the old town. The river is beautiful. Once again, being in the middle of the country, it's going to make going to turn things very obviously easier to travel. But no, I really want as well once again to learn Swiss German because it's going to make my connections easier with people. And now I think I'm crossing my fingers, but next year should be a year without a pandemic, hopefully, at least in Switzerland.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
being outside, having a coffee in the morning or in the afternoon and just talking with the locals. This is something I kind of missed in Lausanne.
Yeah.
And now I want to do it next year in Bern.
Okay, cool. Do you have actually the opportunity to go on the ice yourself from time to time to play it a little? When you see so much ice hockey on the screen, you certainly get even more desire yourself, right? To play hockey?
All the way around. Because you see a lot of hockey, sometimes you can be like overdose, like, oh, I can't stand hockey anymore. So, no. I mean, at the end of the year, it was, I had like 1 week or two without any ice hockey on TV or anywhere
Yeah.
because I couldn't like watch it anymore.
Okay.
But now I can't wait. Yeah, now I can't wait to watch hockey. I'm watching a lot right now with the staff and preparing next season.
Yeah.
So my appetite for hockey is back. But yeah, I did play last year. I did play some games last year. Some players like it to tease me sometimes, saying like, "Hey, Leo, we need a player right now. Can you play with us?"
Okay.
The coach sometimes during our quarantine and our not quarantine, but like COVID breaks.
Yeah.
Sometimes he was asking me if I wanted to just play and wear the equipment. So I did play sometimes against the guys.
Yeah.
Not good enough to get a contract as a player.
Ah.
This is what John Fuss, the GM, told me. He's like, "Leo, you need to work on your slap shot a bit more, and maybe next year you find a contract with us." No, it's good. I think it's the right, like, if I want to skate, I can skate.
Yeah, okay.
I don't really miss it.
Yeah.
What I mostly miss as a player, you will hear that a lot, is like the camaraderie, the atmosphere in the locker room, like the jokes, being with like just talking about everything and nothing. This is what I miss the most.
Yeah.
And as a young video coach, last year was perfect for me because I was 25, 26, and I could still talk to the players and relate to them by the age. And having like a right balance between being close to them and still being a coach and knowing when to close the door and being professional.
Summarize your everyday life. You watch hockey games all day, right?
I mostly watch sequences. I can spend like, I would say 20 minutes watching the same clip, which sometimes can make me crazy. Like, you want to see something. And sometimes you're just like, no, they didn't try to do this. It was just by accident. I need to find like a new clip who backs that. Like, for example, if you're watching the team, I would say Geneva, for example, and if you see them doing something on their forecheck, you need to be sure they're doing this on, it's consistent. So sometimes you need to spend like a lot of time watching the same games or like trying to find forechecks.
Yeah.
And but yeah, to summarize my day, I tried to be the first at the rink. I tried to be there on like 6:50. I tried to prepare a few stuff, print like the lineup, print program of the day. I tried to make sure that the head coach, when he comes, he has everything on his desk and can be ready to work. All the clips ready as well. The data, like statistics, analytics for the next game. For our team as well, I would say from 6:50, I'm by myself. 7:30, the head coach comes. 7:50, assistants are coming. I would say I have like a 30 minute, which is like me time. I have my coffee. I talk with the equipment manager. We should chat. Then around 8, we start to watch some clips. 8:30, we try to draw the practice, what we want to work on. 9:30, we have the video, video meeting with the players. And then 10 down the ice, 10:15 down the ice. The goalie is a bit before. Sometimes last year, like few times I was on the ice. And other times I'm just staying in the office. So I'm trying to watch a practice and then, giving a feedback to the head coach after the practice when he's back. And, I keep on working on a few videos and normally we go for lunch at 1 and my day is over around like 2 or 3. It depends on the planning. Yeah, trying to be efficient is something I learned last year.
Yeah.
Trying to not burn myself because as I said, sometimes you just try to watch things on the screen and yeah, it's hockey. I mean, there's things you can't control and, even though you think they do this, it's not on purpose. So at some point you need some creativity and liberty for the players.
Yeah.
So that's why you should not like overanalyze everything.
Okay. Okay. You were part of the panel discussion with Hockey is Diversity. Greetings to Martin. We at Bully also believe that racism has no place in ice hockey at all. How do you evaluate such actions of Hockey is Diversity? And do you think that something like this can have an impact? Or what would be tangible steps?
To start with, those two guys, Martin and Peter, they're doing an incredible job.
Yeah.
I mean, when I saw that the first time, I was so moved. I was so pleased and so happy and relieved that people will finally work hard and try to change the culture in the game.
Yeah.
We're talking a lot about other sports, but I think I won't say hockey is worst. I won't say hockey is best, but we have our issues with that. Issue that we have to address. Those conversations need to be normalized. I'm not saying we should talk about this 24/7 because there's other stuff to talk about, but it should be okay to talk about that without feeling bad. I think, I mean, from my previous stories, from, being a French Cuban and, half black, I'm not like your classic hockey player. And I've been under like not so cool things. Let's face it. Insults, kids mocking me, parents insulting me, fans, saying, oh yeah, I was a monkey and all that. And I think the next steps are like, I think teams to work with that. And when I say working with that, it's like try to make hockey a safe space for everyone. That like, you know, for me, when I was younger, I was always wondering, hey, should I tell my friends to play hockey with me? Should I ask my friends to go to a game with me? Not because they would be like lynched when they come, but just, is it a good space for them? Like, are they going to be, can they be themselves? Exactly. Can they be themselves in that space? And, sometimes happened to me, like when I was younger, that I had to change myself, be someone else, being someone a bit more like the players I was playing with. When I'm just thinking that no, Leo, as it is, the French Cuban, the this guy born in Cuba, he's good as it is, and he should be welcome in hockey like everyone. And yeah, like you're black, Asian, you are Arab, whatever, you are homosexual. I mean, hockey should be to me the most open sport in the world because such a cool sport. It's such. Played in like open-minded countries as well. I mean, if you think about Sweden, Finland, Canada, That's why, to me, hockey should be a leader in that. And I'm trying myself since like 6-8 months. Mm. I'm trying to build a few projects. I'm going to present next year. There's one called Bring a Friend. It's super simple. I want every kid from a certain age, from 6 to 10, to bring a friend to discover hockey. A friend for them has not the opportunity to watch a game or to practice or to play hockey, and just to bring them for one practice. The club will take care of the equipment. They can test, and at the end, my goal, yes, it's not to have, like, I would say, a team full of black guys or black girls. Far from that. It's just like, if you want to play hockey, you should not like second guess yourself. You should be like, hey, if I'm playing hockey, it's going to be all fine. I'm going to be accepted. And that's the future as well. As I said to Martin and Peter, hockey at some point has to change a bit. And if he wants to attract, and grow, he has to have girls playing the game, and people from other demographics. And I think, the best way for that is to show them that they are welcome.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And for our listeners, we will put the panel discussion in our show notes with Hockey is Diversity, so everyone can watch that discussion. Very, very interesting.
That was, once again, thanks to those two guys and everyone that are backing him and backing them. I mean, I'm seeing that the German Federation is backing them very, very well. Clubs are following it as well. Yeah. And I really want this to spread in all over Europe.
Who was your role model in ice hockey?
It changed over time, but I really liked P.K. Subban when I was a kid. I mean, to me, representation is key. As I said, like, I didn't have so many players to represent myself with. P.K. was the first guy coming, being very talented, a bit different in the way he was behaving. But as a defenseman, I was a right-handed defenseman as well.
Yeah.
I was trying to copy him. I mean, I was not such a good skater as he is right now. No, I had like a lot of players I liked. I like Ilya Kovalchuk.
Mm.
Why? I have no clue. I mean, he was a great player. It's pretty why. but no, role models in hockey, not so many. Players I really liked, yes, I tried to get a few things from them. It didn't really work at the end. I could injure myself trying to do a few things they were doing. But no, role model, no. No, honestly, I didn't have so many. Maybe in other sports, I really like Thierry Henry, the football player. Now, I really like players who can say stuff as well outside the rink, outside the pitch. To me, I won't say that sport should not be political, but I can say that sport have a very big influence on people.
Yeah.
And to me, when you are displaying, when you're working and fighting for human rights, basic human rights, and talking about that and doing everything possible to change the world in a good way, which is to me totally not political. I mean, trying to make the world a better place for everyone, to me, is not political. I really respect those people. I mean, LeBron James has been doing an incredible job last year. I'm thinking about all the guys from Hockey's Diversity, from Hockey Diversity Alliance, and all that. To me, those guys are great players and great people. And I'm also very amazed by the guy behind Pride Tape. Mm. So yeah, I mean, if you use hockey and sport as a good channel to change the planet in a better way,
yeah,
it seems maybe like a bit cliche and childish to say like, hey, let's change the world and try to make this no war, no fight, we're all good. But I really think that sport can change people's lives, and hockey changed my life. So
yeah,
I definitely think that it can change other people's life in a good way. And that's what I'm trying to do on my level.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. And so, Leo, we are done with our questions. So we thank you very, very much for your time. And we hope we didn't disturb you in Stockholm in your holiday.
I had to wake up at some point.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm kidding. I'm working hard. I'm working hard.
Yeah, sure. Okay. So, Leo, thank you once again. Thank you very much. And we hope you have a good time. and a good start in Bern with the SC Bern.
Thanks.
And
merci.
We hope we see you someone in person, someone.
I mean, the rings are open next year.
Yeah.
So I really hope we have a chance to meet next year and talk about the game. And once again, thank you very much for having me. It was a real pleasure.
Yeah.
And as we say, this is the little German I know. Tschüss, danke schön, and merci, as you say in Bern.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys. Take care. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Well, that was quite interesting, right? Once again, thank you, Leo, for your time. And so closes another chapter in the great book of hockey podcasts.